everyone, and welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Short. Joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett. We are here to talk about the WWE SmackDown show that aired on March the 1st, 2013. Jake and I get together just about every Saturday to talk about WWE SmackDown. We do about an hour's worth of audio here. We give it away free to both our members and our non-members. All the readers here at .net are welcome to listen. But it's not the only audio that's produced each week here on the site, but the vast majority of it is produced only for our members. Jason Powell does a WWE Raw audio review on Monday nights. Will Pruitt comes along on Fridays generally and does the TNA Impact Wrestling audio review. Will and Jim get together every Wednesday for the .NET Countdown, where they talk about the best and the worst in professional wrestling for each week. Jason Powell often does a Q&A audio on Fridays, where members can ask both wrestling and non-wrestling questions alike. And then Jason Powell and I get together every Thursday, but doing it a little bit earlier these past couple of weeks, earlier in the day, for our flagship show, the .NET Weekly Show. We get it out, try to get it out before Impact on Thursdays, and we talk about all the news of the week. Of course, the big news this week, talking about the WWE quarterly conference call, where we saw both the fourth quarter and the end-of-year numbers, both on the monetary side and in terms of things like pay-per-view buys and whatnot. I also got some more information on the WWE Network. It does look like it's moving ahead. Jason Powell and I talk about all of that news on .NET Weekly this week, and you can get that right now, even if you're not a .NET member, just by becoming a .NET member. Head on over to ProWrestling.net. Click on the right-hand side of the page where it says .NET member sign up. Click on that link and we will get you started for as little as $5.50 a month if you take the annual option, $7.50 a month if you take the 30-day option. You will get access to all the audio we produce each week, roughly between 6 and 7 hours every week of audio, plus access to our ad-free version of the site, the .NET member forum, and the .NET member blog section. And as we get closer and closer to WrestleMania, we'll be having more and more news that breaks exclusive to our members. So if you ever thought about signing up to be a .NET member, today is the day. So just jump on over to ProWrestling.net, put Jake and I on pause, we'll wait for you to come back, and sign up to be a member, and then you can enjoy all the benefits, all the audio, ad-free version of the site, and of course the forum and the blog section. One thing we don't do a lot of here on the site is social media. I know that I'm pretty active on Twitter most of the time. Jason Powell does some stuff. He's kind of anti-Twitter on some level, but he does participate there. Jake and Will, a bunch of the other guys here on staff are on Twitter. But WWE made it a big deal this week to make it a social media SmackDown. And the very first question was, how do you do a social media event, something that's live and constantly changing, for a taped show? And Jake, it looks like they had some taped segments, some live segments possibly. It looked like there was a mix of it. They now seem open to the show from ringside, but there had to be times when they were, they're reviewing, or at least it's possible when they were reviewing things like some of the Twitter posts they did and whatnot, that they could have been live. But all in all, the social media aspect of social media SmackDown left me a little bit wanting. Did this impress you in any way?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like a novel attempt, I mean, to try to get some more fan interactivity. I mean, like during the Cesaro and Miz match, they plugged, they basically did a plug in the middle of the match by having one of the falls for the match take place in a commercial break, and then when they came back, they said, well, this is only available for our social customers through the WWE app. You know, basically that fall in the middle of the commercial break was an advertisement. And you know, they also did a text poll, which was similar to what they do at house shows. They had various cameo appearances by wrestlers who weren't on the show. Chris Jericho and JBL joined the announced team via Skype. They had some talent videos throughout. Basically they seem to be really pushing their content that does not take place on the television shows. You know, what their talent is doing on Twitter, what their talent is doing with video blogs through services like Skype and on WWE.com, and some of the backstage videos that they do for the WWE app, stuff that takes place during commercial breaks, things like that. So, I mean, it was social media in the sense that WWE was plugging their own social media, not in the sense that they really had, a mechanism here to promote what their what their fans are saying, because as this was a tape show, I mean, all this stuff had to be pre-baked when it was sent to the distributor. So, you know, there wasn't a whole lot they could do. They did a text poll, but for me, it seemed like what they did was did a poll of the people in the arena and then displayed that as if it was a, you know, an actual fan worldwide television audience poll, because they didn't really post any numbers. They just gave percentages. You know, they didn't really tout their, you know, they didn't blow up how many people actually voted, because I don't think it was a very large number. So, but overall, I mean, it was well done. If you want to consider it a show that promoted what WWE is doing outside of their television shows to try to interact with fans through the internet, but it wasn't much for fan interactivity at all, you know, with the actual television show that was on display here.
Do you think it worked? Do you think they were able to get fans interested in their social media outreaches? Of course, you mentioned the app, the tout, which they are partial ownership in that company as well. Do you think it worked? Do you think that fans possibly saw this and went, hey, that's kind of cool, and went to their cell phones or their computers or whatever and downloaded these things?
I mean, it's possible. I mean, I was considering downloading the app when the fall took place during the commercial break, and I missed it. That was kind of irritating. I mean, I don't know if it was, I think obviously it was a sales pitch for their app, but for the most part, I mean, it didn't really feel like any more intense of a push than what we normally see on Raw. It wasn't even as intense as the early Raws where, you know, Vince McMahon or whoever finally discovered Twitter and decided to have at least three or four windows up on the screen showing, you know, scrollers of tweets and, you know, who is trending all the time and stuff like that. So this, to me, you know, I thought it was fairly well done, but I don't know, you know, just from my perspective, it didn't really push me towards touting or you know, spending more time in the app than I normally would. Maybe if you had fans that, you know, were still unaware of these things, they might have been perked up by it. But I can't imagine it would have drove a whole lot of adoption.
I am interested to see how obviously there's no way that we'll be able to, but I would be interested to see how all this kind of worked, how it was set up, what if any of it was live. Because of my scheduling yesterday and Saturday, I had to watch a UK version of it, an earlier feed of SmackDown than the one that was aired here locally for me on Sci-Fi. And so because of that, a lot of this stuff was cut out. So I wonder when it was added in, if they did that just for the overseas versions, they cut those pieces out. So there were things that I was reading your report, and I was after the fact, and then going like, "Wait, I went back and watched what I'd seen before, and there are actually pieces missing." So I would be very interested to see how this turned out for WWE. We obviously won't be able to, but I think it would be interesting to know how they kind of put all this together. Of also greater interest coming out of the show, I guess, you know, we're going to go through the show from start to finish, so let's pull out a couple of quick talking points. Jack Swagger and Zeb Coulter have an interaction with Jim Ross. Good to see Jim Ross back on SmackDown. What did you think of Coulter and Swagger? It seems to me, Jason talked about this Monday in his report, and we talked about it a little bit in Thursday's .NET Weekly. This act is a little bit of kind of a one-hit wonder sort of thing. They keep repeating the same thing over and over. But is it just me, and maybe my mind just goes to places like this, but have we not moved from just a little bit of just regular old racism to a little bit of the Hitler Youth thing going on right now with the interaction that Coulter and JR and Swagger had on the show?
Yeah, I mean, I caught some of that. By the way, I don't know if you're drifting farther away from your microphone, but you got kind of cloudy there towards the end of your last sentence. But I put this in my report, and I kind of agree with Jason. It does seem like they're trying to find new ways for Coulter to repeat himself, and they're, you know, that Ross did a very good job here of pointing out the brainwashing kind of aspects of this, and I think without him, you know, being such a beloved figure, it may not have worked. But, you know, the segment was all right. I think they got the intensity across. You know, obviously, JR is a megastar for WWE whenever there's in Oklahoma City, and he's a great ambassador there, and the crowd was into what he was doing. And I think Coulter was able to get the crowd up on their feet, you know, by picking on JR. But I don't think they're really advancing this act that I, you know,
doesn't seem like they have anything to say beyond that, you know, mixing up stuff about immigration and, you know, the real American stuff. And they have a couple of catchphrases, but, you know, there really isn't much beyond the surface. It's kind of a shame because I was hoping we were going to get to see a little bit more nuance, you know, from culture and swagger. Maybe some of that's political. Maybe, you know, it's just creatively they just haven't found another angle for this. But you got culture who's repeating itself, swagger who doesn't say much. And then on the other end, you have Del Rio, who has not been blowing the doors off of anybody with face-to-face promos, which have been kind of repeating the chase over and over again. And silly insults, which is much for me. So I think culture and swagger still have potential. That's fine. You know, some more interesting each other today. And, you know, they aren't going to have every week, they're not going to have Jim Ross out there to try to get the second goal.
I'm losing you a little bit. I don't know if it's the bridge or what, but I lost you a little bit at the end, too.
Okay.
We're going to keep moving through this, and if it gets bad, and we hear back and listen, obviously we'll replay it, or re-record it. But if you're hearing this, and that means we came out okay, so apologize about that. Sometimes this conference recording program that we use, the bridge on it, can be a little bit weird. But JC's lost me a little bit. I lost him some there, so hopefully it'll clear up as we go forward. You're right. They're finding different ways to make him say the same thing, but I thought he was exceptionally over the top Friday night, and I don't know if that was done purposefully in the sense of, you know, they're trying because of some of the negative press, maybe, even though I know they've latched onto a lot of that and tried to use that to their advantage. I don't know if they're trying to go a little over the top here and on purpose and just be like, look, let's take this to an exceptionally absurd area. Because, and that way people understand a little bit more. You know, it's one thing if Glenn Beck wants to act stupid, but if Glenn Beck's listeners, who, you know, we certainly have fans in that group, if they start paying attention and they start getting upset about it, we don't want to lose them. So maybe we take it just a little too far as a means to an end, if that makes sense. Or if this is just that it rings a little tone deaf to McMahon and because obviously writers are helping with this, but there's no question, it's being reported everywhere, that this is McMahon's baby. He loves this act and wants to be, you know, this is what he's really focused on. So I don't know if this is him being tone deaf and going too far, or if they're doing it on purpose as a way to further accentuate the fact that this is a character and not, you know, and not obviously what these people really are. Did you get any of that, or do you think there's a possibility they're doing that on purpose, or do you think it's just they don't know how to tell the story past what they've done so far, and so we're just getting retreads of what we got before?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible they're trying to spin this into more of a, you know, kind of cult leader scenario than just the initial backlash was, you know, it was on our forums. I saw it all over Twitter. You know, it was the Tea Party guy versus the Mexican was the stereotype. And, you know, I guess it was pretty easy to get that impression early on. And now they're at least trying to apply something here, like, you know, Coulter is mentally disturbed, brainwashing Swagger to be a part of his little plan here that's, you know, based entirely on his own delusions. You know, so, you know, I get that they're trying to move this into a territory where it doesn't seem so blatantly, you know, race motivated, and that makes sense to me. Whether, you know, they continue to go that route, or whether they're just trying to add this on as an excuse for Swagger to shake it off later on, I don't know. You know, and where the pressures are coming from, and whether they're worried about alienating audiences, I think those are real valid concerns that I'm sure they have to address. But I would think that, you know, they went to all that trouble to make that YouTube video where Colin and you know, they kind of broke the fourth wall and explained that, hey, these are just characters, no reason to get upset about this. I don't know if they would have done that necessarily if they were going to back off their original plan, but maybe you know, it turned out differently. I'm not sure, but I'm thinking that this is all, you know, part of the original plan, and maybe
know, the depth they're trying to add to this is that that Coulter is the kind of insane, mentally disturbed cult leader that, you know, that, and that makes more sense than just somebody who's just a straight out and out racist.
I think there's something to be said for, for what you're saying about this might have been part of the original plan all along with having Coulter do this, because there, you do have to protect your wrestler at some point. You know, Dutch Mantel can do his gimmick and go away and everything's fine, but Swagger has business to do after this storyline, whatever length it goes, is over. You know, he's got to do something after that. And you do want to kind of protect the guys a little bit and give them some sort of logical way out, you know, and setting up the brainwash thing certainly makes sense. I don't know. I just think about it seems mistimed, I guess. It's a little weird. I don't know if they're trying, if they realize they've stalled and they're trying to do more, something different, add to it, if they're doing it as a means to an end to kind of make it, you know, almost, I think about it, I think, because I homeschool my girls and we just did, Oedipus the King was the book we just, or the play we just finished reading, and one of the things talked about how, you know, at one point Oedipus acts this way and he acts the exact same way in a different scene, but in that scene it's taken to an absurd level to create that tragic character, and I might be giving WWE a whole hell of a lot more credit by going that deep into analysis here, but I just wonder how all this is kind of playing together. If this is a mistake, if it's done on purpose, and if it's done on purpose, what reason are they for kind of branching out a little bit and making this seem bigger than what it was? And we'll see how it goes over the next couple of weeks. You're right, Del Rio has not been convincing in his role. He was really bad on Monday night. Jason and I talked about that too in .NET Weekly. The feud has everything it needs to be hot. It's just not working for a couple of different small reasons, and hopefully they can get these fixed and Del Rio can find a way to really connect with the English audience, not just the Latino audience, because he's getting good responses in Latino communities, but outside of that, they clap for him, they cheer for him, and he gets over big in the ring, but everything around the, you know, outside of the ring, people seem to be a little bit aloof about. One thing I know you weren't aloof about, though, Jake, and I know you've been waiting for this for a long time with past emails, and I was watching this play out. I thought, I wonder if Jake is just going to be breathless at this moment. How excited were you when finally we got an actual on-air presentation from Fandango?
Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, you know, he definitely is the eccentric that we, you know, we've all heard that Johnny Curtis is. I mean, he brings a lot of kind of interesting personal tics to this, and you know, he's abusing the ballroom dancing metaphors. He really does seem like he's digging into this character and trying to become whatever lunatic this Fandango character is. And to me, I thought the introduction was actually except for setting him up as just kind of the theory and beyond the pale type. So self-absorbed that he won't even make an appearance with somebody, you know, for now.
Losing you again, Jake.
Sorry, am I there?
We were losing you a little bit, though.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess just to repeat myself a little bit then. He is perfect as the over-the-top, self-absorbed heel who won't even make, you know, an in-ring appearance until, you know, the rather inconsequential backstage interviewer pronounces his name perfectly. And so, I was optimistic about it after his first appearance. We've talked about previously, I saw him at a house show in Minneapolis and wasn't, entirely convinced by his ring work, but he's kind of switched up his act and a little bit. He looks a little bit differently. He seems to be acting a bit differently than he was with Banner and whatnot. Maybe they got it tuned a little bit better and it looks better. Just from the opening promo that we saw from
I'm losing you again. Well, we got a bad connection or something.
Interesting character. Sorry about that. I don't know what's going on in my end. I'm on a house phone, not a cell phone. But.
Yeah. I thought it might be just me, but it might be me. I might just be hearing it funny. But
okay.
I sorry for cutting you off there. You're right. It's an interesting character. I kind of laughed a little bit. We've talked about this before. I am one of the people who believes there is a place on a wrestling card for a comedy act, a comedy match. One of the best matches. My favorite match of 2012, I think it was a comedy match. It was a Takara match. Maybe that was 2011. Yeah, I mean, I went to King of Trios this past year for Takara as well, and they had a lot of comedy stuff in their matches that they like to do. There's places for this in wrestling, and even on a serious show like WWE, there's a place for this on what might be considered a serious show and in the sense of major storytelling. There's places for this. There's a little bit something there for everybody, and Johnny Curtis can fill that role. The problem we primarily have with WWE is that they think that the vast majority of their shows should be silly camp and then tell one story and that's good enough. I think that's where we disagree with them. But this is he's a weird dude. When I finished watching, I kind of laughed a little bit at the whole thing with him and Matt Stryker. I thought he found that good balance of, he would say his name and be all serious in character, and Stryker would blow it. He would kind of, you could see he was frustrated. He was playing frustrated, and so he would kind of come out of the over-the-top character a little bit, like, no, don't get hung up on the ends. It's fine. He started doing the whole thing, and I thought he found a good mix there. I thought it was well done. I just don't know. It's kind of like Damian Sandow. He's a little bit of a comedy character, and I love that guy and that character. I just don't know how good it is to bring these guys in like this. It's nice to have a plan, but if a lot of guys are coming in with silly characters, then you have a lot of work left to do at the end, especially to make them into major stars, especially when you've got guys like, say, Cody Rhodes, who have been around long enough, you would hope to get away from the silly character a little bit, and now he's going back to the whole love stash thing and some awkward moments with Caitlin and whatnot. So I don't know. I don't understand the need to saddle so many young guys with weird and quirky gimmicks like this. I mean, yes, the Shield is up and they're not doing that sort of thing. There are Cesaro's not necessarily a gimmicky character, but so there are. It's not like they're 100%, but it's still a lot. There's a lot of guys that come up with that. Do you think we see his in-ring debut? His gimmick or his argument was he would not make his actual debut until Matt Stryker learned to say his name, and I think the best Stryker ever got it was Fandango, and that's when Curtis told him not to get hung up on the ends. Do you think we see his debut next week, or do you think they play this out and make it wait until after WrestleMania?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not entirely sure. I mean, Stryker mentioned that he was supposed to face Zack Ryder, and obviously that didn't happen because he refused. I could see them playing this out for a few weeks at least. Maybe they can get it to WrestleMania. I'm not sure how long they can actually supply him with writing. I mean, the promo kind of relied pretty heavily on his ballroom dancing metaphors and acting self-righteous when his name was mispronounced. I can't imagine that can carry through another 4 or 5 months, but they've tried weird things before. Your other point about the young wrestlers with kind of bizarre or comedy related gimmicks, I guess. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, in my opinion, too much. I can't imagine that they can really spend enough time getting everybody that has a comedy character doing something genuinely funny on their broadcast. And that's really important towards getting these characters over. I mean, Sandow seems to do a pretty good job just on his own, and I'm not sure how much of his promos are pre-written or how much input he has on that, but he seemingly do something fairly interesting on the microphone every time he's out there. But, it seems like the further down the card you get, the less writing attention you get, and more often than not, the comedy characters get kind of the scraps in that department, and rarely are they doing things genuinely funny. And I think that's bad news for a lot of these characters because they're just going to fail to reach any kind of critical mass and gain a following if they're doing, really unfunny stuff every day.
Yeah, no, and you know, Colt Cabana, a.k.a. Scotty Goldman, when he was in WWE for about 5 minutes, you know, there's a guy that can work and can be funny. And he was in a match with Grizzly Redwood, who's a short guy who's, you know, got this lumberjack gimmick, this ridiculous beard, and it was a comedy match, and it was great. I mean, they went in there and they worked their asses off. So there's certainly a place for this, but you have to get the acts over. You're right, and they give them very little time, and a lot of times what time they do give them is poorly, you know, written comedy or whatever else. Some of it works, but when you look at this, you've got Damian Sandow in the opening segment. You've got Kane and Daniel Bryan doing their gimmick later on. You've got Fandango making his debut. Just a lot of silly shit on this show, and it's there's places for it, but I don't know if there's that many places as we got tonight on SmackDown. But let's go to the show from start to finish. Again, this was aired live on March the 1st, taped on the 26th in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and we get the opening, the WWE narrator recaps everything that's happened over the past couple of weeks. Lillian Garcia is in the ring. She's reintroduces Ricardo Rodriguez, who handles ring introductions for Alberto Del Rio. Jerry Lawler joined Michael Cole and Josh Matthews ringside. He, first time back on SmackDown and whatever they said it was, and I think some of this had to have been taped at different times based upon what you were saying too, what I saw and what you saw, but the vast majority of the stuff seemed to have been done from ringside, even though there were portions of it that may have been taped at a later time. Damian Sandow interrupts at that point. He starts going off on Del Rio about his poor sentence structure and the general poor understanding of English. He said Ricardo Rodriguez is wearing a rented tux and carrying a spit bucket, which makes him look ridiculous. He said that he was a superior man because he is only accompanied by his good looks, his robe, and the gazes of the unwashed masses. Del Rio said since Sandow wanted to talk about unwashed, he should wash his mouth because it smells like caca. Del Rio is really... he really likes filling in those single word kind of Mexican one word insults that people understand. Caca, he loves perro, he loves calling people dogs. I don't know, maybe that's whatever it is that's not connecting with him. There's something in the fact that it's almost like he's pandering to the Spanish language sometimes for Americans. But anyway, as you put it, apparently that's edgy humor in WWE these days. It did lead to our first match, though. Alberto Del Rio defeating Damian Sandow in 12 minutes and 40 seconds. Del Rio wins with a cross-arm breaker on this, and Sandow had to tap out. A good match. It had one commercial break in the middle of it. They went into the match pretty quickly, pretty short promo to set it up. And once again, you know, for me, Jake, Sandow shows that at least in the ring, I mean, I think as a whole, this guy shows that he belongs and is going to be a big star someday. Not with this character, obviously not with this gimmick, but to have the charisma to pull this type of character off and his in-ring skills, I see nothing but upside for this guy. And again, here, we see Del Rio get over in the ring, but nobody seemed to care much prior to this, and he was in Oklahoma, which had a pretty good Latino community there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the you know, the one sentence promos with the, you know, with one word of Spanish at the end, you know, as an insult is really going to reach out to a lot of people. And I think, you know, he's kind of proved that. I mean, Monday was, you know, you and Jason talked about it on Monday with his, you know, with his cliche kind of promo, and here he just had that one sentence response that was also kind of, you know, more than anything. And he's just failing to connect in that sense with his promos. But I thought the match was very exciting. Sandow got his surprising amount of offense. The champion of Del Rio was pretty well improved in the end. There was pretty easy to expect that Sandow had a chance to win, and then, you know, there's a tap-out finish with well done. So, and it was a nice reversal on top of that. So, yeah, I mean, it was a good match, and I thought both men looked well, or looked good here, and Sandow gave a fairly good promo start, and Del Rio was kind of weak, but I thought the match made up for it, and it was a much better opening to SmackDown than we normally get with 20 minutes of people, you know, just kind of talking back and forth and not accomplishing a whole lot.
Again, we get Del Rio and the build for Del Rio and Swagger, the World Heavyweight Championship match at WrestleMania. We get that the build for that match with these guys separate. Del Rio, you know, having a couple of moments. He's been interviewed backstage after the match, and the one sentence here, and the big, you know, the very good match with Sandow, and then of course Swagger's along later and has his moment with Jim Ross and whatnot. But they're keeping these two very far apart as a rule. They had them in the Miz TV segment together, but other than that, they've been kind of building this separate. Is that the way to go here? I was very critical of TNA Thursday night because they're not putting guys who were in similar matches near each other, or in the same matches at Lockdown near each other. They're keeping a lot of guys apart. And as a rule, I'm a fan of that in the sense of keeping them apart in the ring. But the build for this, and you know, like a lot of what I was complaining about on Impact too, is like the build for some of these matches. You don't have to have them wrestle together, but at least have interaction. Do you think the feud is hurting anybody, the lack of interaction, or do you think this is smart because Del Rio's not being able to stand his ground with Zeb Coulter?
Yeah, I mean, I think based on, you know, the rather weak interactions that they have had promo-wise, it's probably best to keep them apart until maybe they find, you know, some more interesting things for them to say. And they still have a month plus before WrestleMania, you know, actually happens. So there's some time to change approach if necessary. If whatever they have planned still, you know, kind of stays mediocre and unexciting. I think thus far, you know, keeping them apart is probably pretty smart because we don't want to, you know, to lose whatever steam they have on their first confrontation physically, you know, real early while building the dispute. But, you know, I think if it doesn't take off, we still have, you know, enough to try to tease that further, or maybe, you know, have some elementary interaction between them, you know, prior to WrestleMania, try to cement, you know, how much they hate each other. But at this point, I don't think it's been a bad one to keep apart.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I don't know. To me, they need to have more together. Maybe that's what Del Rio needs, is something to bounce off of. Maybe that's why he's been so. Of course, the one time he had it, he didn't do a great job, but it's such a small sample size, you know. I worry about this feud losing steam very quickly. I mean, it started off very hot, all the great press that it was getting, and since then, it's just kind of fallen off, and I can't really put my finger on why. After the break, though, after the match, we did get Del Rio interviewed backstage. He said he wants to take on all newcomers. He said he feels that he is a leader and he wants to send a positive message to fans to be a fighting champion. He said that since it was social media SmackDown, he'll let the fans choose his opponent for next week on a SmackDown poll. And so that was set up for a little bit later on. We got the announce team then introducing a recap of Punk versus Cena from Raw. The recap was not the whole replay. On Wednesday night during main event, I got the actual entire match, or at least got probably 90% of it, if not the entire match. From those guys. This was more of a recap and talked about all the different swings in it back and forth. And then I had the guys cutting, you know, the promos they had cut earlier in the show cut in throughout that. So very cool video. Be sure to check that out. And then we got Daniel Bryan and Kane, even more comedy. We started off, you know, with a little bit silly Sandow, and now we've got silly Daniel Bryan and Kane. They said that they were going to face the primetime players again. The only reason they won on Monday and Kane was able to beat them was because Bryan was blindfolded. He said that they had a rematch, except this time it was going to be reversed. Kane would be in the blindfold. Daniel would have the arm tied behind his back. And Kane said he would show that he's a superior wrestler because he could win even while blindfolded. And the best part was he didn't have to look at Bryan's goat face. You know, I thought to set up the match that we have a little bit later, fine, but this acts run its course, haven't it? I mean, I hate to use the term jump the shark because I said that when they did the stupid When Harry Met Sally videos that were just, I still maintain to this day, were god-awful. But I mean, they're just out of gas, right? They need to separate these guys. There's nothing left to see here from them, is there?
Yeah, I think they've officially, you know, beaten out of all the toothpaste out of this tube. I mean, there's really nothing left here. And, you know, they're, Brian and Kane are doing an admirable effort to keep it running for what I assume is going to be a WrestleMania match between the two eventually. But I hope that is the absolute finale and we see them part ways, because I think at this point, you know, they risk doing damage to both men by continuing to have them do this ridiculous comedy stuff heading into WrestleMania.
Yeah, I don't mean it mean. If you're still liking this, that's fine. But I feel like they've got all the toothpaste out of the tube. It's time to shake hands and move on. Even if that's a match to get that to happen, that's fine. But it's time for that tag team to go their separate ways. Real quick before we move on, let's assume that's what's going to happen. What do you do with the tag titles? Who do you put them on?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. Maybe the Shield, two members of the Shield. I mean, somebody to reinvigorate that division that actually might work together as a tag team. I mean, it was a novel concept a couple of months ago that they were going to try to, you know, put some effort into the tag division, and for a while it seemed like they were, but the longer that Kane and Bryan have held on to these titles, the more worthless they've gotten. I mean, they haven't defended them in a serious manner in quite some time, and Team Rhodes Scholars has fallen apart, and you know, the primetime players are not even a threat, and so, yeah, I mean, there's very little going on there. They need to build a division around actual teams. I can't think of, you know, any individual tag team that's really over at this point. I mean, if they could put it on, you know, two members of the Shield, I think that would actually be a move in the right direction, maybe.
Oh, I think if you put it on the Shield, you have to do the Freebird rule, or if you're WWE, the Demolition rule. You know, any two of
sure.
the three be the guy to do it. So.
But
I like the idea. I hope wherever they do with it, it makes sense, you know.
Right.
We get the Miz. We get the clip from the Marine 3. I don't want to spend any real time on this, but I have to know. From this clip, did this look as cheesy to you as it does to Jason and I? I mean, this looks like just a movie you get drunk with friends and then laugh at. It looks to be so much, I mean, which may make it end up being a great cult classic, but I don't think Miz is going to get too many Oscars for this performance.
Yeah, I can't imagine he would either. You know, it's a Marine movie. I mean, WWE Films has never been known for its particularly spectacular writing, so I'm assuming it's going to be, you know, just another vehicle to try to get WWE Films profitable. I mean, I can't. It's probably going to be a straight to DVD release if I remember right. Is that what they had in the advertisement?
It is. Yes.
Okay, so I mean, it's probably just an attempt to sell some movies on the back of whatever popularity The Miz has in the mainstream, or, you know, like you said, for people who want to laugh at a bad movie, perhaps. But it's not going to get WWE Films or The Miz any attention beyond what is given to him on WWE programming for the movie. So it was pretty hokey from what I saw.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it when it comes out, but I'm not entirely sure why. I'm not being forced to for the site, but I think I'm just to satisfy my morbid curiosity. But Antonio Cesaro, Miz was out after that, and so Cesaro was out next for our second match of the night. Antonio Cesaro defeats The Miz in a 2 out of 3 falls match in 13 minutes and 1 second. He wins 2 falls to 1. Cesaro wins the first fall at about 3 minutes and 12 seconds with his neutralizer. As you said earlier, the second fall came via the figure four from Miz. I guess it was probably a submission, I would guess. During the commercial break, it was on the WWE app. So that's where that one occurred. And then the final fall comes, rolled up with a handful of tights. But the ref got hit and was staggered for a second, kind of, you know, did the whole eye thing, and that leads to a bunch of reversal roll-ups, and then finally the ref gets counts for Cesaro while he's got a handful of tights. It was an okay match. I was fine with the match for what it was, but this feud is just weak, and they keep going with these gimmicky finishes. You had that weird, the weird finish that they did was at the pay-per-view where the ref disqualified Miz for dropping the knee on Cesaro on the low blow, but he kicked his leg out from under him, and here we get a handful of tights, and we got a 2 out of 3 falls match that didn't really need to be 2 out of 3 falls. It's like they're trying too hard with this, and it's not working.
Yeah, that's the exact impression that I got. They're really going, reaching into the bag of tricks to try to develop some interest in this. And, you know, The Miz was, you know, had the shoulder taped up after, you know, Cesaro did the kind of wheelbarrow thing against the barricade. And then he got a surprise win on Raw a couple of weeks ago with the figure four, and that kind of kept this thing moving. And now they had a controversial finish to this match. I mean, they just haven't built really any real animosity here outside of, you know, just screwy finishes. And I don't think that's really a good basis for a feud. That, you know, both of these guys talked, would think they would actually, you know, do something interesting with them on the microphone. You know, I know the Miz TV segments have not been known for their quality, but you would think that, you know, some of these segments would get his Miz sounding off on his U.S. title feud, but we just haven't seen him. It's quite bizarre. I don't know if they're doing more on WWE.com or on their app or on Twitter that I'm not noticing about this feud, but for, you know, on television, it just looks like they're having matches just for the sake of having matches. That's not a very interesting thing for me, at least.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You talked about they might be doing more on some of their other places, and that's cool, but, you know, if you and I don't know them, and we cover this stuff, you know, I cover it for a living. This is how I, you know, pay the bills in part, is doing this sort of thing. So if I don't know what it is, then what's the chance that, you know, the random fan that you pick out of the bunch knows what it is? I mean, people aren't flooding to that either. So it's if that's what's going on, then they are not doing a good job of getting this match over. I just think they're trying too hard. They want to make these guys both big. The problem is that they've not given Cesaro any type of serious matchup or feud that people could sink their teeth into. And now that you've given him one, you've given him The Miz, who's been just an utter failure as a babyface because it was a weak babyface turn. And pretty much all he is, it is just now the smarmy guy that you cheer instead of the smarmy guy that you boo. I mean, there's fundamentally no difference to his character. And he's still got the worst figure four in the history of professional wrestling, so I don't get it. I don't understand how you screw that move up so much. It never ever looks believable to me when he does it, and it can't just be from that first one that he blew. It's I don't get it. I he puts it on and I go, that don't hurt. You know what I'm saying? It's so
funny. Yeah, I hear you. It's definitely not it's not Ric Flair's, that's for sure.
No, it's not. I mean, it just looks like they're kind of laying there with their legs wrapped around each other. It doesn't even look like it's a hole. I don't get it. I don't understand why. It's so frustrating being a Flair fan to see that hole just put on by the face. Anyway, JBL was climbing a mountain. You've got somewhere for charity. I'm almost positive that he's on Everest because this is the time of year, late February, early March, is the climbing season for Everest. And he said, the last tweet I saw said he was on Mount Death, which I'm going to assume is Everest. I think that's where he is. I don't swear me to that. Don't start saying, hey, now he's on Kilimanjaro or whatever. I don't know, but I think he's on Everest. But he had a Skype call. He ripped on Cole, as you put it. He's been missed on this show. This to me was kind of the moment when they bring it back in, and you go, wow, yeah, that's what Jerry Lawler used to do, is be just antagonistic like that, and it made it good. And now he's too much of a shield. It's even though they work together in the same booth and they find a happy medium, to me this was just, you know, a study in contrast, because you've had Lawler the whole time, and then because JBL's got such a short window, he just heals it up real big on Cole, and you go, oh, that would have been so much better than what we get from Lawler. But anyway, I'm off my my announce team soapbox there. He checked in from the from there. He's doing his Seven Summits for Seven Summits for Kids or something like that for the charity group he works with in his home country of Aruba, and it's a good country for or a good charity for helping the poor kids there. WWE, of course, sponsoring all of his climbs. So good on him, good on them for WWE for coming in and agreeing to pay for that, so that all the money he raises goes straight to the charity. So I'm hoping it's very successful, and be safe on the mountain, John. It's friggin', even if it's not Everest, you said you're climbing Mount Death, be cool, man. You know what I'm saying? Don't be dumb on the mountain. Backstage, Orton and Sheamus were shown talking about the Shield. Sheamus offered to back up Orton. Orton wasn't really interested at first, but then, well, okay. And Sheamus agreed he'd watch out for him in his match later on because of the Shield running in. Did that tee it off for you? I mean, was it that point did you go, oh, okay, well, they're coming out?
Well, of course, yeah, and almost, you know, it's dead giveaway. But I guess the thing that's really starting to irk me about these two guys is that they're just going nowhere. I mean, Orton has, you know, while he has a character, it hasn't really been doing anything for quite a long time now. You know, and Sheamus is in the same boat. You know, they, as soon as his title feud with Big Show was over, he was basically, you know, a ghost ship out there floating in the sea with absolutely nothing. And they've had him involved with the Shield, yes, and they had, you know, he's had some matches, but, I mean, from a character standpoint, you know, they just have doing random stuff. And a lot of times, it's, you know, he's trying to be funny, or, you know, he's doing, you know, really bad promo work, picking on Wade Barrett, or, you know, whatever it is. I mean, neither of these guys are doing anything interesting right now. And seeing as how they're some of the most popular guys on the roster, it kind of boggles my mind that they can't find a way to fit them in somewhere. I mean, it's very bizarre that, you know, that Sheamus and Orton are, yes, they're in a conflict with the Shield, but you would think there would be something interesting they could do promo-wise that would keep the crowd engaged with their characters, but they're just not doing it, and it's kind of a letdown for me because I like both of them generally.
Yeah, it's not a good build for this, and it looks like we are going to get that six-man match at WrestleMania, and I do think this is where Orton turns. The question becomes, who's that sixth man going to be? And I've got a couple of different theories. We'll talk about it more as we get to the Shield attack later on. But Jim Ross made his entrance, and after the commercial break, he called out Jack Swagger and Zeb Coulter. He put over Oklahoma. You know, obviously that's where they were, his home state. He talked about the Oklahoma City Thunder, you know, and then said that he recruited a guy from Oklahoma who was someone he respected, and that was Jack Swagger. He said he wanted to talk about, you know, what their comments or controversial statements and whatnot, but he wanted to start, and I was instantly struck with how smooth and easy JR transitioned over to this, and what a difference he makes, what his experience brings to the table. But he wanted to talk to Swagger about, you know, he said you took a leave of absence because you had been on a losing streak, and when you came back, you were a totally different man. You know, what changed for you over that time? Before Swagger could say anything, I'm not even sure that he was moving to say anything. I don't think they meant to make it look like Coulter cut him off. It was just that Coulter answered for him. But Coulter jumped in at that point and said that what changed was that he saw the real problems in America. Coulter helped Swagger see the real problems in America, and he came back to fix those problems. Ross kind of gave him the evil eye that he was directing this question to Swagger, and said, but, you know, since Coulter jumped in, he didn't understand where he was coming from. Coulter said he struggled to understand how Swagger could have gone on a losing streak, and he said, don't you think it's he didn't say coincidental, but he kind of implied it was like a conspiracy theory that suddenly Jack Swagger goes on this losing streak and a guy like Del Rio can sweep in and win the championship. And then Swagger, this is to me where it got weird, is when Swagger turned and said, we the people. That's all he said. And I realize it's all he says, and part of this is to kind of cover up for the list. But this just seemed incredibly robotic and brainwashed and like a very Hitler Youth-ish to me, because he's a big, blonde, blue-haired kind of guy. I mean, sandy blonde, but, you know, he's got that big Aryan build to him, and he's just, we the people, constantly, no matter what Coulter says. That was where it got weird for me. But Ross, you know, tries to recover at that point, changes the subject to WrestleMania. Coulter interrupted him again and said that when the dust settles at WrestleMania, the championship will be in the hands of a natural-born citizen and one that speaks English. He said that Swagger is fighting for the heart and the soul of our country, and once again, Swagger did the we the people thing. At that point, Ross goes, you know, are you brainwashed? What's going on? I don't understand where you're coming from. Coulter said, to Jim Ross, he goes, you don't look like a blind man. My guess is you just refuse to see. Swagger has not been able to say anything other than we the people at this point. Coulter jumps in, said that if anybody's brainwashed Swagger, it might be Ross, because he knew Swagger during his formative years, all Coulter did was open his eyes to the truth that was around him, and that's very much a cult for, you know, people who aren't familiar. That's very much what cult leaders sort of say, is that I'm not brainwashing anyone. All I did was open their eyes to the reality around them. So it certainly feels like this is where they're going with it. I don't know if they're going to grow the cult, but it certainly feels like they've set it up for that case. At that point, Ross mouthed off to Coulter, or Coulter said that Ross should do the, that's right, Ross had told him, because while you have the right to say what you want, I think you should exercise your right to remain silent. Coulter said, since they were giving each other friendly advice, Ross should maybe prevent himself from doing something he would regret later on. Ross started to go back at Coulter, at which point Swagger slapped the back of Ross's head, knocking his hat off. He pushed him around, he grabbed the microphone, he goes, "You don't talk to a great American like that. You're not a great American." And Swagger had called JR a great American at the beginning of the whole segment. He goes, "You're not a great American, you're nothing but a sympathizer." At that point, Del Rio's music hits, he runs out to the ring, picks up JR's hat and hands it to him. He takes the mic and he says, "I'm not part of the problem, you two guys are part of the problem, and I'm the solution." He said, "Jack, you're not a real American, but what you are is a real jackass." And that was it. It just ended. They played Del Rio's music. Coulter and Swagger left the ring and left the area, and Del Rio was standing there with Jim Ross. They had good tension. The payoff was terrible. Del Rio is trying to be the one-line, the one-liner babyface, and it's not working for him. Other than the fact that they kind of repeated some of the same stuff, and I'm not really sure where they're going with the kind of brainwash angle, I thought this was set up well and everybody here performed well, but the ending left a lot to be desired. And as I talked about a minute ago, it does create some nuances, some potential change within this storyline going forward.
Yeah, it certainly does. I mean, the brainwashing thing is new, and there's a lot of directions that can go with that, as to what Coulter's real motivations are and where that goes, and Swagger discovering that. So there's an opportunity there, for this to become more interesting down the line, more than likely past WrestleMania. But where they're going with the Del Rio one-liner babyface thing is really, I think that's off the rails at this point. I mean, it's just not working. They're going to need to find some way for him, to convey, a more relatable message to the audience. There's some cheers for, the one-liner insults, but overall, he's just not reaching out past, the surface level to connect with people beyond, just the surface. And I think Coulter is actually doing a better job of that. He's probably reaching out and talking to, maybe WWE's actual racist fans who probably do exist out there in the wild, than Del Rio is reaching out to people who would be more sympathetic to his point of view. So they're going to need to do something more more in line with a humble babyface who's just trying to try to hold on to his championship and to overcome, the adversity of people who are accusing him of being, a border jumper and an illegitimate champion and all this other stuff. And I'm not sure how you do that with an aristocratic Mexican character, but they're going to need to find a way to do that. And Coulter is going to, they're going to need to expand on him too, because he's, like we mentioned earlier, is just kind of repeating himself. So there's a whole lot of places for this to improve. And without Ross, I mean, this segment probably would have been one of the absolutely terrible. I mean, if they would have had Cole out there or something. Because, like you mentioned, Ross's professionalism and ability to transition and to create tension really made the segment in the ring with Coulter and Swagger. And Del Rio got the big cheers because, he showed Ross the respect to picking up his hat and making sure he was okay. And then he delivered the rather banal one-liner. But there's definitely massive room for improvement here, and hopefully, they have a lot of time here to improve that. But they're really going to need to find a way for both of these characters to, to find some deeper roots to dig into the ground.
Yeah, I think we both agree, good core storyline here, a good plan, a good base. It's just not turning into the feud we thought it was going to be, and it's still early. There's still lots of time left. I don't want to make it sound like I'm rushing for something, but it's not clicking right. There's something wrong in the timing here, and they need to figure out what it is, because this has the potential to be a really good feud, I think. Zeb Coulter, I'm probably speaking for you here when I say this as well. Let me know if you agree or disagree, but I mean, Dutch Mantel, whether you think what he's had to say is compelling or not, whether or not you think that he's being repetitive or not, I mean, all those things can be true, but his ability to deliver lines, his ability to go out there and sell what they want him to sell, I mean, he's been great. No surprise, but he's been great.
Oh, yeah, I respect him a lot. He's fantastic. I mean, and he's got a lot of experience doing exactly what he's doing. I mean, I think a lot of this probably, you know, goes back to Memphis with Waller. You know, there's a lot of storylines that they used to do in Memphis, if you were a fan of you know, what they were doing there, that were pretty controversial for their time period. So I'm sure he has a lot of experience to work on. And, you know, he booked very successfully in Puerto Rico for a long time and TNA. So, I mean, there's a whole wealth of knowledge there. And you know, as a performer, you know, he's really kind of surprised me with Coulter, how well, you know, he's been able to just fall right into this role and look like he never, you know, missed a beat. He's like a guy who's been on television for years and years, and he's a very valuable asset to the Swagger character. Who, I mean, despite all of Swagger's talents, one of them is not promos.
Yeah, that is definitely true. Cesaro, Wade Barrett, and Dolph Ziggler were the choices for Del Rio's opponent in the text poll you were talking about earlier. They announced those as the choices. And then Team Hell No makes their entrance. After commercial break, we get a short video that recaps how they did the blindfolded, the one-arm tied behind their back gimmick from Monday, and that led to our third match of the night, which they, of course, did again. The Primetime Players defeated Team Hell No this time at 7 minutes and 23 seconds. It was Kane who was blindfolded, Daniel Bryan with the one-arm tied behind his back. Bryan is the one that pulled out the mask, and it had a goat on the front of it, so that Kane was the goat face, which Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler thought was fake hilarious for far too much of the match. A lot of comedy in this match. Darren Young is in at the very beginning with Kane, trying to get him to trip, but Kane never tripped. Pretty much so as you expected. Kane looked awesome, even with the mask on. Bryan looked like a chump. And at the very end, Kane grabbed a hold of Bryan, had him by his, was going to punch him. Bryan screamed, "No, it's me. He grabbed the beard and pulled to confirm that it was. He let go of Bryan, and that's when Young, again, was able to grab Kane from behind and roll him up for a surprise three-count victory for Primetime Players. And then afterward, Kane pulled the mask off so that it saw that it had the goat on it. Bryan said it wasn't him, immediately asked him to hug it out. Kane put the mask on Bryan's face and then punched him in the face and left. I mean, what do you say about this? I didn't enjoy it because it's lost its steam. They went out there and performed well. For people who like this act, I'm sure this was a hot segment. I couldn't give two shits about this team. They're just done to me. They're out of gas.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in the same boat on this. There's there's little to glean from this other than, you know, they obviously plan on doing something with these two guys at WrestleMania, probably together. You know, the Primetime Players still look like chumps because they can barely beat, you know, a team that's blindfolded with one arm tied behind its back. So, I mean, I don't know what the ultimate plan is to separate these guys, but, man, just get it over with already.
Like I said, if you liked it, if you're into their act, this is probably a pretty good segment for you. I can understand that, but I'm not into the act anymore at all. It was they lost me at the very beginning, then they got me back, and now it's time for them to move on. And I think they know it too. I do think they're kind of treading water a little bit, trying to get to WrestleMania. We got a movie trailer for Halle Berry's WWE film, The Cell, as you put it. It's not Halle Berry's film. It's David Otunga's film. He's in it from like 2 minutes as the mostly mute partner or second guy, second cop. He's like cop number two is his credit. So how dare you give Halle Berry the starring role there, Jay? Come on now, that's David Otunga's movie. And then backstage, Matt Stryker interviews the Big Show. shows that it was WrestleMania season and he had to make an impact. And what was a better way to make an impact than chokeslamming Randy Orton and walked away? Not a, you know, a pretty simple interview from Big Show. Nothing too much there, but he had a good point. And then at that point, Chris Jericho called in on Skype. He said Fousey was killing it on their tour. He plugged the tour. He plugged the replay of Robot Combat League right after SmackDown Sci-Fi, which if you haven't seen, I do believe Jason's prognosis for that was don't. And he said he would be back in WWE soon. And then we got, you know, hype stuff heading into the commercial break. Well, have you seen Robot Combat League by any chance, Jake?
You know, I have not. In fact, I turned off my television right after SmackDown was over, so I did not catch the replay, but it drew big ratings, so I guess we'll have to see if they're able to actually carry a big first week rating over to week two, which is always the big problem. But I guess as a concept, there probably are some sci-fi nerds out there that are probably pretty interested in it.
Well, as Jason said, he can understand why the concept would draw a first, you know, a good first week rating, but the application of the concept is pretty bad. My favorite thing that he complained about was, no matter what, if somebody lands a body blow, Pyro goes off like within the robot that got hit, and it's not like on a major blow, any body blow, there's a big explosion.
Hilarious.
Like, okay, yeah, just a little bit over the top. It's like Rock'em Sock'em Robots with built-in pyro, apparently. So, but not as cool, I guess. I don't know. After commercial, we did get the introduction of, and I want to make sure I say it right here, Fandango. You have to, as Johnny Curtis said, you have to attack the A's and not get hung up on the N's. He said it about five times because Matt Stryker couldn't say it. It's Fandango is how he says it. Kind of a funny moment. We talked about this earlier. He corrected Stryker a couple times. Stryker asked him about his fighting style, and he said he's memorized everything about ballroom, and he was going to take his rhythm and precision to the WWE. He started to say he would debut next against Zack Ryder, but Fandango cut him off and said, I'm not debuting until you can say my name right. When he did come into the frame, he did spin a woman through who was supposedly was his dance partner. I don't remember if we saw her at the end or not, but, you know, Curtis's character is what it is. If anybody can pull off a strange-ass character, it's going to be Johnny Curtis. So I'm not going to hate on this just yet because he is a weird dude. I guess feel free to add anything here. I already talked about it a lot earlier, Jake, but the one thing I honestly thought when this was over was, well, at least he didn't pour milk on himself.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if he can pull it off. I guess that's, you know, I'm not, you know, for or against the character at this point. I think, you know, it could be interesting if it's weird enough and he's able to pull it off, and I think they got the right guy doing it. But, you know, that's the big question mark. Can Johnny Curtis turn this into something interesting over the long term? I mean, you know, they're going to run out of ballroom dance metaphors eventually, and he's got to do something with it. But we'll see where it goes. I'm not going to discount it yet. I'm sure there's something they have planned for this.
Yeah, actually, if anybody can pull it off, it's Johnny Curtis. So we will see what he has over the next couple of weeks. At that point, we got a recap of the Lesnar and Triple H brawl from Monday, and then some more plugging for Del Rio's voting. After commercial, it was revealed that Dolph Ziggler would be the guy that Del Rio would take on next week. Then you seem to think that this was just in-house, and WWE certainly, without saying as such, they set it up as everybody was able to vote. No idea which it is, but he will be Dolph Ziggler versus Del Rio next week on SmackDown. Again, a match that, in theory, we're not going to see, but it does make me wonder, since I think they tried to set it up, because we've seen this plenty of times on Taboo TV and whatnot, where WWE kind of pushes you towards the choice, and Ziggler is the choice that makes sense there. Do you think it's possible that we're going to see Ziggler and the briefcase kind of mixed in with all of this by the time it's all said and done at WrestleMania?
Well, I would hope so. I mean, they've been holding on to that briefcase and teasing it for for quite a long time now. And Ziggler is, I mean, at best treading water at this point. I mean, he's got, you know, AJ threatening that if he doesn't start winning, you know, she's going to find an alternative. And, you know, they've kind of been not necessarily losing steam with him, but, you know, he hasn't really, you know, reached the potential that I think everybody thought he was heading to a few months ago when he was feuding with Cena. So, you know, personally, I hope they get him into the mix within that title picture. I think he's a more interesting character and a more talented wrestler than anybody, you know, really gives him credit for. He kind of plays second fiddle to whatever the, you know, whoever's in the spotlight at the moment a lot. But he's definitely a guy that I could see doing a lot of interesting things, you know, as kind of that cowardly heel champion that WWE loves so much at various times. So, yeah, I certainly hope so. I mean, obviously there's no certain answer here, but I like Ziggler and I like what he brings to the table.
Yeah, I think he tries too hard sometimes to make the other guy look too good, too. I think sometimes he just goes too far and forgets that he needs to protect himself in the process. So, but, yeah, good stuff for Ziggler coming up soon. Hopefully he is facing Del Rio next week based on this poll. And then after that, our fourth and final match of the night, Randy Orton defeating the Big Show. Well, I guess maybe it was a double count, a no contest. I don't really know what we ended up with. It was some sort of no contest, or perhaps Orton won by DQ since he was the guy that was actually attacked. Before the match, we got a replay of the video from Monday where Orton was able to hit the RKO on Seth Rollins with the help of Sheamus, distracting the other two. And then the finish on this comes, Orton and Big Show pretty much having a standard match we've seen from those guys. The Shield comes out. Randy hits the rope DDT on Big Show, and that's when the Shield comes out. They circle the ring. Sheamus comes running out at that point, slides into the ring. He's standing there. The Shield hit the ring and attack. That's when the ref calls for the bell. Big Show still selling the DDT and made it to his knees. It was kind of hanging on the rope. Guys were fighting around him, and it looked like the Shield was going to get the best of everybody, but at that point, Big Show stood up and knocked Roman Reigns the F out. That was the way they shot it. It was just a really cool visual the way it came off. Reigns hit the ground hard. The Shield realizes what's going on. They run from the ring, grab Reigns, and drag him out through the crowd. And then Big Show turns around and chokeslams Randy Orton, which was his stated intent from earlier in the show. And then Sheamus kicks Big Show in the face with the bro kick to close the show out. Sheamus is the one that's left standing. Where the hell is Big Show going to be the third person in that six-man? I think it's still Ryback ultimately, and I think that they lose with Orton turning, and Ryback goes on to finally beat the Shield in some sort of gimmick match at Extreme Rules. That's my guess right now. But is it possible that Big Show is the third guy in that six-man match, and it does appear like they're going to have at WrestleMania with Sheamus and Orton? I mean, could Big Show be the guy? Answer that question and tell me also what you thought about the match.
Yeah, I mean, I think Big Show would be an interesting third person to add there. I mean, he doesn't really have anything going on at the moment. And, you know, he's best in a role where, you know, you're not really sure where his motivations lie. You know, he's got knockout power, you know, that they really play up well. And, you know, the KO on Reigns look great here. And, you know, Big Show is a volatile kind of monster, works best as a heel. And I think, you know, if they can portray it right as, you know, the Shield gets on his bad side and he comes to some kind of maybe a tentative truce with Sheamus and Orton for that one match, that, you know, it could play off as interesting, and you could still do the turn that you're talking about with Orton if they wanted to. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely some room for that to happen if that's the direction they want to go, if they can find something else for Ryback to do, which, you know, is still, you know, out there as well. But the match itself, like you said, is pretty based on numbers. We've seen Orton show wrestling numerous times back down and never different. You know, they mixed up their spots fairly well and Big Show and Orton fairly well together, but it wasn't anything that was gonna blow your doors off. I think, you know, the interesting part was you know, what happened after the Shield interfered, and that should lead into some more interesting storyline things. But the match was pretty pedestrian in it, but I liked the post match stuff quite a bit.
Did you like Big Show knocking out the Shield and then turning around and choke slamming Orton? I appreciated the fact that, especially if he ends up being that third guy, I like the fact that this is kind of the beginning of that, and that he's like, you know, he keeps that I'm out for myself sort of situation.
Yeah, I think Big Show is better, you know, when he has no allegiances, know, when he, and so that made sense to me, you know, and, you know, whatever, if they do add him as the third man, whatever truce they make with, you know, with Sheamus and Orton should obviously be, you know, be kind of tense, and that makes sense. So I think, you know, that's the angle they want to work, and it's probably the best thing to do to keep all three of those guys interesting going into the match.
Of course, you pointed out the big flaw with my Big Show theory, and it is who I ultimately think is there. Like I said, is what do you do with Ryback at that point? So Ryback is where I'm leaning. The Big Show could be there, but another guy who wasn't on the show this week, and we don't know what he's going to do at WrestleMania, Mark Henry. Jake, where was Mark Henry this week, and where do you think they go with him ultimately? There's still plenty of time to put him in a match at Mania, obviously, but kind of surprising with as hot as he's been since he's come back. No Mark Henry on SmackDown this week.
Yeah, that caught me off guard. I wasn't sure if, you know, just had a night off or, you know, what was going on there. But I could see him sliding into a match, you know, with Ryback if they, you know, if they want to put Big Show into a six-man with the Shield. Or, you know, you could easily swap out Henry and Show in that other match as well with Ryback. I think, wasn't Jason the one who said he thought Big Show and Ryback was pretty likely match for WrestleMania, or was that somebody else? I can't.
Well, that was his prediction. He thought that Show was going to keep the title and Ryback would win the Rumble and go on to face Show for the World Championship there. So obviously that's not going to happen. Doesn't mean Ryback versus Show won't happen, but it won't be for the title.
Yeah, so I mean, they do have some options there, and whether they're already set in stone, I don't know. But I think we're going to get, you know, Henry in a pretty prominent match at WrestleMania, and one with Ryback certainly wouldn't be the worst option. I would be concerned about Ryback being actually able to get him up for any of his signature offense, because he has struggled to get big men up in the past. But I guess they'll cross that bridge with it.
Yeah, he's had problems with Tensai, and Tensai, as big as he is no Big Show. So I hope they wouldn't be setting him up for failure there. But yeah, no Mark Henry this week. He was the only real notable name missing, I guess. And we'll see what's happening with him. Still a lot of mystery left in that WrestleMania card, Jake. I mean, obviously the stuff at the top seems pretty clear. WWE Championship done, World Heavyweight Championship done. Obviously, Brock Lesnar versus Triple H, all signs point to CM Punk and Undertaker. And once you get away from that, it's really a crapshoot about who ends up where. I think, again, we can put Sheamus and Orton in a match against the Shield with a third person in there. Ryback and Big Show both, you know, credible for that spot. But then what do you do with the other one? Mark Henry sitting out there with nothing to do. Our mid-tier champions, Wade Barrett, Antonio Cesaro. Maybe we get Cesaro and Miz again. I don't know, but there's no clear, you know, it's not clearly pointing there yet. Nothing with Wade Barrett. He's almost of no consequence right now. Who knows with the tag championships, you know, the women. Who knows? I think Layla is going to end up with a title shot very soon based upon what we just saw on TV, but, you know, rarely do they do that at WrestleMania. So I just, there's still a lot left up in the air to book for WrestleMania, and I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, Jake. I think it makes sense to keep people tuning in between now and Mania. If you tell everything you've got to tell right now, then, at least as far as booking all the matches, you know, they've got three confirmed right now. We expect Punk and Undertaker to be confirmed any day. You know, I mean, they've got enough there to really start selling this pay-per-view, and yet they've held back enough that what we've seen sometimes in years past is they don't have to worry necessarily about running out of steam, because there's still a lot of guys to put in matches between now and April.
Yeah, and I think they're taking a decent approach to that. I mean, having something to reveal, you know, just about every week heading into the Rumble is not necessarily a bad thing. Give something fresh on each of your broadcasts, and they do have a lot to build to here. So having all this extra time is going to be beneficial to them. Hopefully, we get, you know, interesting matches all up and down the WrestleMania card. Certainly,
top of the card looks like it's going to be excellent just for match quality, if nothing else. So I'm definitely looking forward to WrestleMania. I think it's going to be a pretty blockbuster show.
And that is all the time we have for this week's show. Jake and I'll be back. I believe is it five more SmackDowns before WrestleMania? Is that right? Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 5 more SmackDowns until WrestleMania. So, again, plenty of time to book 5 more Raws as well with the Super Show concept. You obviously can see some of the SmackDown matches booked on Raw ultimately. Jake and I will be back next Saturday to talk about that show as well. But don't forget, folks, we've got a lot of audio on the site, not just this free hour every week. The .NET Countdown is a great show. Jake and Will do a solid job with that each and every week. .NET Weekly with Jason Powell and I on Thursdays, plus all the other audio we do for you. It's a great time, folks, and only $5.50 a month when you take the annual option. Head on over right now to ProWrestling.net. Click on the .NET member sign-up link and become a .NET member today. Thank you for listening to this show, though. Thank you, both readers and members alike. We appreciate your support of ProWrestling.net and making it your home for all your wrestling news on the Internet. We will be back next week with another breakdown of WWE SmackDown. Until then, he is Jake Barnett. I am Chris Shore. Everyone have a wonderful weekend, and take care.